The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good morning. How's the sound? Is that okay? Doing multiple multitasking. So what I thought this morning would be to explore one of the more active sides of mindfulness practice. You know, there's a way that sometimes when we talk about mindfulness, we talk about mindfulness practice, it sounds very simple, and in a way it is very simple. Just this noticing what's happening in our experience, just being here, just being present. And then mindfulness practice has this other quality of to be aware and then to know that we're aware when we're aware. If a monk once came to Zen Center, a very wonderful Burmese monk named who was called Usilananda. Maybe some of you knew him. And the definition he gave of mindfulness was to be aware that you're aware when you're aware. What? But just to be here, just to be present, but this quality of knowing that we're present, knowing that we're here. And one of the ways we talk about mindfulness practice, or that's often emphasized, is the side of mindfulness that is very receptive, that's very allowing, that's very spacious. And I think we talk about it so much in this way because this is often what we need. You know, in a full life, in a busy life, with a mind that's moving a lot, that's used to doing, you know, to shift into a mode of receiving experience, allowing it, having some sense of ease around whatever's happening. You know, that's often what we need to hear. That's what we need to practice with, and it's very, very helpful. You know, so. I know for myself, especially if I'm meditating towards the end of the day, you know, when a full day has happened and there's a lot in the mind and, you know, maybe there's not so much, but there's just imprints of the day of you know, of conversations, of energy, of it can be very helpful to consciously almost like do nothing, just sit and totally allow experience to be what it is. And there's something healing about that, or easeful, or, you know, just making space for, you know, even if the mind is distracted, you know, just there's a way of letting spaciousness grow to hold even distraction and even unease, even difficult feelings or difficult emotions. Just it's all okay, it's all being held. And there's something very sweet about that. And from that place of ease, or from some place of relative ease, it can be very helpful to bring in some of the more active qualities of mindfulness, active qualities of meditation. Just to take a step back, there's a teaching, you know, one of the most significant teachings of the Buddha, which is called the Seven Factors of Awakening. In Pali, this is called Bodhanga. Bo is awakening. And these are said to be the seven qualities of mind, of heart, that become developed through mindfulness practice. So just by being mindful, just by thinking, you know, this steady, consistent mindfulness, these qualities start to develop. And so mindfulness is often seen as being in the middle, and then on one side, there's energizing factors, and on the other side are the calming factors. And so this is a little bit like what I'm saying with this receptive quality and then this active quality. So on the receptive side, there is tranquility or calmness, concentration, the Pali word is samadhi, and then equanimity, upekkha. And often when we think about meditation, you tend to think of those, maybe, of those qualities of calm, being tranquil, some kind of steadiness of mind, of concentration, and then this equanimity, this sort of balance of mind where we're not really being tipped over by whatever happens. You know, it's all somehow equal in a way. It's all we're at ease with the ups and downs of things. So that's the calming side or the receptive side. And then there's this energizing side. And the three qualities for this energizing aspect are investigation, energy, sometimes called energy or interest or effort. Effort, so energy and effort is usually called. And then joy, sometimes translated as rapture. So on one side, there's the energizing qualities, investigation, effort, energy, joy. And on the other side, there's the calming qualities, tranquility, concentration, equanimity. And then mindfulness is said to be the balancing factor. You know, mindfulness is really what we put our energy into. And then there's a way in which these other factors unfold. So, but for this morning, or for fun in a way, it can be helpful to focus on one or another of these factors, more in a sense of noticing it and recognizing it. So, sometimes these seven factors are presented sequentially, and the next factor after mindfulness is this energizing quality of, usually translated as investigation of our experience. As is often the case with these Pali terms that we've inherited, sometimes there's not one English word that really hits the mark. So investigation captures something of this quality. But often we can associate investigation with thinking or analyzing. And that's not really what this is. I mean, I think there's a place for reflection and for analyzing. But investigation, another word I like to use is inquiry. Inquiring into our experience, this factor has the quality of looking more closely, being more intimate with what's happening, to see more clearly, to see more closely. The Pali word is Dhamma Vichaya. And Dhamma is, there are a number of translations for Dhamma. The one that's usually considered to be most relevant is, in this factor, is phenomena, it's just experience. And then Vichaya is some kind of discerning, discriminating. It has the meaning of sorting, like if you're sorting, you know, my daughter just got this little cash register. My mom got her that, and these plastic Fisher-Price cash registers for her birthday. I'm not sure exactly why. But there's a fascination with, you know, the kind of cha-ching, and they don't even use these anymore in stores, but, right? You know, you just put your phone on the thing. And it comes with these plastic coins, and there's blue coins, and there's red coins, and there's green coins. And so the quality of Dhamma Vichaya, of discerning, of investigating, would be to know, oh, this is the red, these are the red coins, these are the green coins. These, you know, this kind of sorting quality. It's said that this quality is very closely connected to the wisdom factor of the mind. And in a way, it's nicely paired with calmness and concentration. You know, so it's like you could just in a meditation sitting, you could see, you know, you sit down, you're kind of mindful of the breath, the body, sounds, thinking. And then maybe this question comes into the mind, what's happening now? What is this? What's happening? That question itself is the factor of Dhamma Vichaya, is the factor of investigation. You know, what is this? What's happening? And you may see that there's some agitation in the mind. It can be very helpful to intentionally bring in some calming, some tranquility. Maybe it's being with the breath. Maybe it's consciously letting go of thinking. So coming back to this kind of simplicity of experience. Or you may notice that things are pretty settled. Things are pretty calm. And in that way, it can be very, very helpful to drop in this quality of investigation. And so it's like, what would that look like? In a way, it's often expressed in terms of questions, you know, questions. So one of the questions that's often used, especially in Zen, is what is this? What is this? You know, just, so it's like just, it's a little dropping it in without expecting to answer it, without needing to answer it. It's more like turning the mind to being interested, to being curious. What is this? Or what's happening? You know, what is happening now? Does that sort of make sense? You know, if this and there's something that happens when you just drop in a question without needing to answer it or without, it just turns the mind towards a, you know, a kind of openness or kind of looking at experience. So investigation, inquiry, questioning experience, you know. It could be said that one of the central questions of Dharma practice, of meditation experience, is what is, well, certainly it's what is this, or what's happening, what's, you know, But it's almost like also, what is really here, in a way? What is our experience really made up of? You know, and this line of inquiry can lead us into the wisdom teachings, you know, into emptiness, into, you know, what is this? What is a thought, really? What is, you know, we start to notice or tune into the aspect of experience, the aspect of phenomena that's empty, that's not substantial, that just depends on what? It depends on, you know, other phenomena. It's like it can't stand by itself. So, you know, so inquiring what is really here is one aspect of investigation. Classically, investigation helps us to see. The way I think about it is, it's almost it helps us to see our experience through the frame of the Buddhist teachings. So it's like, so what does that mean? It's like investigation or inquiry is the quality that helps us to know what is the path and what is not the path. It helps us to know what is wholesome and helpful and skillful and what is not wholesome, what is not helpful. So it's the way I think about it is it's like mindfulness takes us to a place where we see we have a choice. Like if I'm irritated and I'm angry with someone and just want to kind of say, stop doing that. If mindfulness isn't present, I'll just react. That's what's coming up, and that will just be expressed without a lot of reflection or maybe without a lot of wisdom. You know, it's just that reactivity of the mind. And then if mindfulness is present, it can, you know, we're kind of in touch with what's happening. We know there's irritation. We know there's reactivity. There's anger. How do we know? Well, thoughts are coming up and energy is coming up and maybe, you know, the body is, you know, if you're really angry, the body is shaking or, you know, you can feel, I know I can feel the blood rush into the ears and the face and it's just kind of, so we have all these cues. Okay, anger is present, or irritability is present. The quality of investigation is, so if mindfulness shows us that there's anger, if we're aware enough that we're angry, and if we're aware that we're angry, if there's enough mindfulness present, there'll be some kind of choice. You know, rather than just blindly reacting, we have some choice. I can act on it. I can say something. I could not say something. I could, you know, do something else. I could, you know, shake my fist at the sky silently, you know, or file it away for later, or, you know, there's some sort of consciousness around it. The quality of investigation is the basis on which we choose. So it's like saying, okay, you know, you can see if I go in this direction, this will be helpful, this will be skillful. If I go in this direction, this won't be that helpful. This won't be that leading me or the other person to more anger, more reactivity, rather than to, you know, positive, wholesome qualities. So it's the basis on which we choose. I don't know if that, does that, I mean, it's sort of an abstract thing, but it's like, one meditation teacher I know says, the quality of investigation is knowing what's what. It's like knowing, it's a step beyond mindfulness. It's a step seeing more closely, more clearly. And it's seeing experience through a dharmic lens, in a way. It's like, you know, and so the classic example of this is to see experience through the lens of the Four Noble Truths. It's like, will this bring me more suffering, or will this lead away from suffering into more ease, more freedom? One of the images I really like for this quality of inquiry or investigation is being in a dark room and then turning on the light, having the light switched on. And so once the light is on, you can clearly see what's there. You can clearly see. It doesn't take with thinking, but it's just, you know, it's just apparent. It's just, you're able to notice differences and distinctions. So in the classical Buddhist suttas and teachings, darkness is sometimes associated with a kind of beautiful in a way, but a kind of an experience of unity or experience of concentration. That's where the mind and all the senses are drawn inward. So there's this unity of experience, and that's like the pitch black and then so from that space or from that unification of mind or kind of wholeness, the light gets switched on. And when the light is switched on, you know, we can really see what's there. We can see, you know, rather than just having some idea of this is the breath, you start to see that the breath is not actually one thing, but it's made up of many different sensations, vibrations, you know, happening moment to moment to moment. So you're seeing differences, seeing distinctions. That's in more of a meditative mode, but also when there's strong emotions happening or some feeling, this, when the light is turned on, when the quality of inquiry, of questioning, of discernment, of investigation is turned on, we start to see, there's actually a number of different emotions that are operating, and to be able to almost like separate out the strands, you know, that, there's, there's a little bit of irritation, but maybe there's also a little bit of anxiety, and there's a little frustration, and there's fear also there. And there's, you know, so investigation is the quality that starts to see these differences. This is very, very helpful. When we can see clearly and see accurately our experience, well, for in one way, it's easier to bring this quality of acceptance. You know, in order to accept what's happening, it's very, very helpful to know what's happening, to know clearly, this is sadness, this is grief, this is, you know, we can actually clearly notice and name experience, then we can actually accept it. You know, just to say, oh, I'm going to be accepting and accept it, it's a beautiful intention. But when we're not actually aligned, if we're not really seeing what's there, acceptance doesn't really, people often say, well, acceptance doesn't really work. I try to accept it. But we're not really seeing it. You know, it's for acceptance to do its magic, something needs to be seen clearly. Maybe, you know, this is something to explore. So one thing to sort of end with or to leave you with is, like I said before, this quality of inquiring, of questioning, of investigating experience, it's not so much about thinking or analyzing, but the way I think about it is it's almost like this spirit of, to have a spirit of discovery, a spirit of exploration. You know, I think when we bring a lot of shoulds to meditation, I should sit down, I should be with the breath, the mind should become, you know, that's not so helpful in a way. And so we often say that meditation practice, it starts where we are, and to enter fully into how we are, into where we are right now. And then something about this spirit of exploring experience, you know, this openness. With this quality of investigation or inquiry, I often think of the process of making art. And I don't know if any of you are interested in art or might be artists or have that, you know. There is this sort of willingness to step into what's unknown is, I think, a big part of the creative process. And so when we sit down to meditate, it can be very helpful to just remember that we really don't know, you know, what's going to happen in the next 10 minutes, the next 20 minutes. And what else to say about that? That I've recently gotten interested in a very fascinating painter who is quite in the middle of his life, he's an English painter, and in the middle of his life, he started losing his vision. And, you know, having cataracts and various things and multiple operations. And his vision started to change over time. And what he discovered was with each progressive sort of degeneration of the eye and his ability to see, he started to explore what it would be like to paint more and more from his own inner experience. You know, and this is just an interesting, where I think there's the parallel to meditation is, it's like the subject matter, if if meditation practice is our art in a certain way, our subject matter is our own experience. You know? And we're always having experience. So in that way, we're always having experience, we'll always have a subject matter, and whatever experience we have is always, you know, in a sense, the perfect subject matter. You know, it's the right, it's, you know, it's just our experience. So this painter, what he discovered was that the more he painted out of his own experience, his own inner experience, the more he enjoyed the process. But also, a very startling thing happened. His paintings got better. They got so much better that people started to say that only when he began to lose his sight did his full talents as an artist blossom, to the extent that towards the last, I think, 10 or 15 years of his life, he was legally blind. And he made these unbelievable paintings, legally blind, made these unbelievable paintings, which were so, I mean, first of all, if you look at the paintings, you think, you would never guess that the painter was blind when he painted them. And then so people would often say, I can't believe a blind painter painted that, because it's not like these were totally abstract, you know. These were figures, people in his lives, portraits, and it's not, they're not just blobs on a canvas. There's the shadow, I mean, it's just so nuanced. The feeling of the drawing is like, it would be very difficult. I mean, it's such a high level of technical skill. It's like, how could he ever do this? Well, there's a few videos of him online that show that he, you know, they're sort of painting sculptures in a way. So the hardest thing for him, being blind, was just to orient himself to the canvas. But once he was in there, he was seeing it all in his mind's eye. And then, in a way, because he wasn't beholden to, well, a tree is green and a person, you know, has this color, and the colors are unbelievable, because he was so free, you know, in his mind. You know, that this. And then so people would often say, how could a painter who was blind do this? And what his son said is that this painter, his name is Sargi Mann, and then his son said, people don't really get it. It's not that he did this, he made these paintings despite being blind. He made them almost in a way because he was blind, because it gave him the freedom, you know, and also he was blessed with this incredible quality of inquiry, of investigation, to just, the day after he came back from hospital and was like, okay, well, you know, I'm blind, you know, what now? And had this willingness to explore, to discover, and to somehow enter into his experience and find a way to communicate it. So when I was reading about him and looking at his paintings, I thought, wow, this is really this quality of Dhamma Vichaya, of inquiry, of questioning, of investigation. And it's, you know, so somehow to approach meditation practice as our art, as, you know, the art of meditation, or the art of really looking at our, being willing to look at our experience in a different way. And we may be amazed at what can unfold, what can be possible, you know, when we have this willingness to explore experience in this way. So, thank you very much. The name of the painting, Sargi Mann. Sargi Mann, M-A-N-N. His M-A-N-N. Yeah, first name Sargi, S-A-R-G-Y. You can, if you just Google him, there's all kinds of great stuff. And yeah, it kind of, just to look at his paintings, it's like, very inspiring in a way. Yeah, question.
Question, talking about the investigative mind, what's the purpose then beyond that?
Yeah.
If you become aware, apply this inquisitiveness, questioning in order to notice what's.
Yeah, no, great question. So, like, to what end? What's the purpose of investigating? In one teaching, it said that the Buddha was asked, what is the quality, how do people wake up? How do people, and he said, there's only one quality by which we wake up, and this is the quality of investigation. So investigation, being very close to wisdom, is to seeing what's really there. Investigation is the quality that sees impermanence, that investigates this mind-body process, which seems so solid, but starts to see that it's impermanent. And through impermanence, we see not self. Even this self is impermanent, is empty, is not a solid thing. And that's, you know, one of the ways we can wake up. So it's a great question, and it's really this sort of wisdom, the investigation. So the point is not just to be calm, you know, not, and even just to be equanimous, that's not really the ultimate goal. It's great, it's beautiful, but it's really to bring this questioning in, this, and to see what's there. So sometimes that's, you know, in Zen temples, sometimes there's a Buddha, but often there's Manjushri that has the sword of wisdom, of cutting through delusions. So this quality of investigation is for cutting through.
In other words, I hear, in order to explore insights, that the investigation would lead to insights about what it is, and that it leads to then the awakening.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
So basically, you have a lot of mixed emotions, and often have, just like, you know, experience of a regret sometimes, strong emotions.
Yeah.
When those feelings arise, how do you usually deal with it? I mean, I have sometimes, it is a reaction. I go, oops, I should have done that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, great question. So what I was trying to say before, when you emotions can be one of the most difficult things to practice with, because, you know, they have, you know, by they have an energetic quality, they have a, often there's some place that we're stuck around emotional experience. So mindfulness would be this very simple knowing that strong emotions are present. You know, so okay, you know, there's a storm of emotions, and you realize that, you notice it. So that's mindfulness. And then this aspect of mindfulness practice called investigation or inquiry would be seeing more clearly, more closely, oh, it's not just this amorphous blob or storm of emotions. There's actually, you can clearly see that there's regret. You can clearly see, oh, and there's anger. Oh, and there's sadness. And those are strands. And it's not, you know, you can start to see that in your experience. It can sometimes be helpful to name it, to label it. It's like, oh, this is, you know, I really thought that there was a lot of anger, but actually, I'm starting to notice sadness here. I mean, the more predominant experience is sadness. So you start to note that, oh, sadness. This is sadness. And through that, through actually clearly seeing, you know, this is the investigation, right? Clearly seeing the sadness as sadness, it's easier to almost in a way have some ease around it, you know, because you're acknowledging the truth of what's there, you know, as opposed to saying, I'm fine. It's like, no, you know, there is sadness. Ah, when you can actually acknowledge the sadness, sometimes there can be this release of like, okay, your system is aligned with the truth. And so another translation of Dharma, of Dhamma, is truth. You know, so we're investigating the truth and we're aligning ourselves with it. So that's, you know. Yeah.
Well, underneath that, is it still curiosity is a word I like for this quality.
Yeah.
But, so we see the feeling really clearly, which already requires a sort of being in awareness rather than identified with the feeling.
Yes.
And it helps create, you know, that's a step. But also to inquire into the root of that.
Yeah.
You know, like, really, this isn't coming from this incident right now. It's often conditioning.
Yeah.
Some sort or another clinging aversion. So, is that part of the inquiry process too? I know it can get easily into analysis, so that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. Just this, did everybody hear the question about I think I would say yes, that the quality of investigation of inquiry is about or can include getting curious, getting interested. And, you know, what is this? Where is this coming from? Or, you know, noticing patterns, noticing, oh, you know, I flew into a rage at, you know, a person, all they did is say hello, you know, and I, you know, what's that about? Or what is that, you know, what is that, what's really, you know, so that curiosity, the way I see it in terms of meditation practice is to almost like embrace the curiosity without following it into trying to come up with an answer or answers. Oh, it must be when my mother did this, or it must be because this happened and this happened and this happened. And that can be a very useful way of reflecting. In terms of meditation practice, it would more be just like of just this orientation of the mind of like, I wonder what that's about, or I wonder, you know, just getting curious of, you know, seeing a pattern of being stuck or seeing some kind of maybe overreaction or something. So, okay, what is that? And being open to the experience that we have in response to that curiosity. So it's not so much about following it down, it's like, but even when you can just ask the question, a memory may come up, an experience may come up, a part of the body may come up. It's like, oh, that's interesting. You know, rather than thinking, oh, I know why that happened because my parents did this, there may actually be a memory or an experience of, you know, of something or of childhood. And then it's like, again, is being with that experience and being curious, being interested in it, not being so quick to categorize it, to know it, but to just let that be there. So it's almost like the way I see that process is it's like bubbles coming up to the surface. And so, you know, just allowing experience to arise, to be itself. And then this dance between accepting it as it is and allowing it, and then this curiosity, looking closer, you know, look a little bit, you know, looking more a little, what is this? What is, you know, in this? So it's really a dance, and it's really, you know, to experiment. You'll know if it's tipped over into analyzing, then we've sort of, you know, we often know retrospectively. It's like, oh, the last 10 minutes I was thinking about, you know, how could, you know, wow, that's why, you know, making these connections, which can almost be intoxicating. They're fascinating, and they're, but to just bring it back to the experience we're having is very, very helpful. Because these questions, the questions are not necessarily meant to have an answer, but it's almost like they evoke an experience. And it's almost in a way we become the answer. We become the experience. So, you know, it's like, so just to explore what, you know, what how that feels and how that is different from just, you know, the more discursive thinking of like, oh, you know, what's this and where does that fit in? I don't know if that. Yeah.
In meditating perhaps on that experience, you might tease out the threads that were part of that experience and see that maybe for the next time, understanding how I might be more comfortable in that interchange with
others. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, there's that. There's the kind of seeing more clearly what's there, and that helps, you know, everything basically to really see. But then it's like, you know, especially for everyday life, it's like we're always making choices, you know, just like, you know, if we're lucky enough, if we have enough mindfulness, we see, you know, that we start to see that we have a lot more choices than we even realized. And then this quality of inquiry, of investigation, can be helpful in the sense of, on what basis do we choose? You know, how do I choose, you know, there's something difficult that I need to tell someone. How do I choose? Should I say it or shouldn't I? When do I say it? How do I say it? Or should I even, is it even my place to say it? You know, so all these, you know, so this quality of inquiry is like, it's just, it's like, what is, you know, what will, so classically, it's like to help us know what is leading onward towards more freedom, more, more happiness, more, and what is going to lead towards more suffering, more. And that sounds very complicated, but in the moment, it's very interesting, like, even just meditating, you can often see that you have a choice of whether or not to go into a story or a fantasy or something. And it's like, if you see you have the choice, then sometimes you still choose to go to follow it. But I've been amazed and just that this quality of investigation or inquiry can spontaneously show up and just be like, well, that's not going to be so helpful, or that's not so useful. And so, you know, so that's it. It's, you know, it's just, and then in terms of the unfolding of practice, it's said that just simple, steady mindfulness practice itself starts to generate investigation, inquiry, start to get more interested in experience. It's not so black and white. Oh, you start to see, oh, there's these different shades of things. That's interesting. Oh, that's interesting. You know, so you start to get interested. And then through this questioning or this willingness to explore the spirit of discovery, that itself generates energy. There's something energizing about that. And so that's the third factor, which is in Pali, virya, you know, energy or effort. So it's like that engagement, you know, and just thinking about this artist, this painter who was, the quality of energy and engagement that he would bring, it was not easy to, you know, do, and I think it took him months and months to complete a painting, but something about that spirit of exploration, it generates its own energy, and that's when meditation practice can become very interesting, because we're seeing new things, we're discovering new things. So this is a questioning. And it's also interesting to look at what is our relationship to questioning itself? What are we not willing to question? What do we don't want to question? Even aspects of the Dharma, of teaching, you know, we don't want to question that. Are we not? What do we not question about assumptions we have about who we are, about who other people are? It's such a vast area. So I hope that doesn't leave you with more questions. Maybe it's good. It does. Yeah. To be aware, and then to be aware that we're aware. So. Maybe this is all a dream. it's very interesting. And it's the reason I dropped that in there is this, sometimes people say, well, if mindfulness is just being present, then my golden retriever is mindful, right? And, well, you know, maybe they are. You know, I don't presume to know what, you know, to be inside another being's experience. But we often distinguish mindfulness practice from a kind of just simply being present. You know, a dog can be very present and very alert. But is that mindfulness? You know, and then the mindfulness, it has this almost like reflective quality that I know that I'm being present. You know, so that's the only, that's, you know, definitely the presence is the main aspect, but there's this, there's awareness of that. So, okay, thank you very much.